run to the far side of the field. Dirty O'Connor in possession now on the 50-yard line. Sending it upfield. Nick O'Connor is moved into the center. There's some quickness here. And it's working. Here comes Nick O'Connor. Up and on the left wing now. Racing out for Jojo Barrett. Trying to save him from going over the end line. He saves him from going over. He's tackled by Andy Cullen. And Jojo Barrett sends a high lobbing ball across the hallway goal. Fisted out by Nolchin. Nick O'Connor's there now on the 21-yard line. He takes his shot and he sends it over the bar for the point.
Yeah, and you're welcome to Terrace Talk. Eamon O'Sullivan and Weishi Fogarty with you right through until 7:30. And don't forget, it's an extended Terrace Talk tonight, 7:30. And of course, that was the never-to-be-forgotten, unmistakable voice of the one and only, the late Mihal O'Hare, describing in detail one of the great points that Mick O'Connell scored in his long career in Croke Park. And I can tell you, we're delighted we have the man with us in the studio tonight. Mick, you're welcome to Terrace Talk, and congratulations on your selection as Kerry Man of the Year.
Thank you, Weishi. This is my first time in the Kerry studios here in Tralee, so I look forward to having a good chat with you here this evening, yourself and Eamon.
Thank you, mate. Nice to have him, Eamon.
Oh, well, it's a dream come true. We're delighted to have him, especially as Kerry Person of the Year. And again, as I suppose, speaking for myself, and I know for you, one of our favourites and all-time greats of football. And I know he's a modest man, but over the period of night, it's great to talk to him and to have him on with us.
Yeah, of course, the listeners out there, no doubt, you'll want to get involved in the show. 066-23666. Margaret is waiting for your call. If you have any message, if you have any question, just ring up 066-23666. Mick, turning to you, tell us about your youth and where you were born in your young days and your family.
Well, I was born in Villainshiden on the south shore of Dingle Bay in a small home there to Jeremiah and Mary O'Connor, born in 1937. I was the fifth in a family. A boy and three girls had been born before me, and two girls and two boys followed after. The two young boys died in their infancy. So that was me. I was fifth in a family of nine. Yeah.
And Mick, your father wasn't born in Villainshiden, so he wasn't. Tell us where he came from and his people. There's a long tradition there.
That's right. Sidon, which was across the way, about 3/4 mile across, and the mouth of Dingle Bay there. And he married my mother in the late 20s. She was Mary O'Connor from Tullamore, at the other side of Loch Hay, which was the other there, south of Dorrishead. And how it happened, they had moved across to Valencia in 1933. Two girls and a boy were there then, and my father decided to move across for convenience, not because of economic necessities, but because of he was a fisherman and very busy at sea, wound up trying to bring the children to school. So for that reason, he moved across. But that was my ancestral home, and it's still, I look on it as my ancestral home, Beggness, because my people had been there for centuries, since records began. And it's interesting, I mentioned my father, he married Mary O'Connell. My grandfather married and Mary O'Connell also, from Milnook Pasty back near Port McGee. So My grandmother's and my mother's side name was Potts, which had a Welsh origin, so blood running right through Tyndall O'Connor. There's a history of fishing and ships piloting. That was the lifestyle my people had in Bangness. But there's also a lot of other history. In Kilvarnock, graveyard in Carsaveen, I see a headstone from 1870, where there was a 14-year-old boy who'd been drowned in November 1870, and his father, that he met my great-grandfather, had that headstone erected his memory. He was 14 years of age at the time, therefore he was to have been born in 1856. And I often heard my father saying that was his grandfather found that boy at low water spring tide, and as he found in the morning after the drowning, there was crabs creeping over his face. So that is the way of life in the islands. There's always bit of danger close to the sea, and it's amazing, only for my father moving across to Valencia, I thought if I'd be sitting you here in the Kerry studio this evening, it'd be a different lifestyle totally, because that island was isolated.
That's just the question I was going to ask, that it must have been as close to football and to fishing at the same time.
As close to I don't get that.
In the sense that you could have been a fisherman as just as much as being a footballer.
Oh, that would have been the lifestyle, but the opportunity wouldn't be there. There are breaks you get in this life, and just a quirk of fate. My father moved across to Valencia, and otherwise, although my father was an active man, and he was, I'd say, if he got an opportunity football, he'd been good himself, because he was a good seaman, a good boatman. He learned to cycle in Beggness Island, where there wasn't an inch of a road. He was a good oarsman, and he was able to kick left and right when he kicked it up, us as young lads, which many so-called stars today cannot do. So that is how I happened to be in Valencia.
What were your young days like, Mick, growing up there? Now, what was your pastimes and what was life like in the house? How did the grub come in, as the fella says?
Oh, Valencia, well, mainly from two seafaring activities, but we had the small holding as well, which was a time which was the small holders all around the headlands in the islands of Ireland, really, their self-sufficiency. Tillage, cows, calves, all sorts of crops, potatoes, everything was grown. It was a time of self-sufficiency. Nothing was bought, that him probably the cane sugar. And you could say, it was like as Goldsmith said, when every rood of ground maintained this man, that was at home. But with the sea tradition there was a great supply of fish as well. You name it, mackerel. Mackerel was the big fishing of the times. It was right up to the 40s, it was still going very strong. Place, every sort of fish, but I think one of my favourite was scallop, a shellfish found in the bottom of the harbour. It was a beautiful feast and still is one of the nicest foods I ever eaten.
Are there prevalent scallops now, Mick, as they were in your time, we hear about all this pollution and everything? Are there prevalent
now? No, it's not pollution. There was a bit of overfishing. They're not as prevalent, but they taste as good as ever. But overfishing has thinned them out a lot. But Valencia Harbour was famous for them and still is. Maybe with a bit of preservation, we'll come to that again. But in the young days in Valencia, that was... basically, my pastimes, football, of course, we played football, but there was plenty of other activities. Valencia, at that time, it had a very multicultural sort of a population. It had, as I said, the smallholders and those people from the Western end of the island, but also they had a cable station run by the Western Union, radio station, lightkeepers' dwellings, and at the time, you could say that it was as forward as advanced as any place on the west coast of Ireland, on the mainland.
And it gave a lot of employment, Mick, of course, didn't it?
Oh, it did. There was a lot of indirect income there. And give you an idea, there was two bakeries. There was a Freemason Lodge. Some of the South of England men, the Freemason Lodge, you go to Waterford once a month. And there was two piano teachers. There were two piano teachers in the island, which there are now, two doctors, small village hospital, very, very self-sufficient. People would often think in those days that the islands were isolated, kind of impoverished. Nothing could be further from the truth. Feeling self-sufficiency. No motor cars, but really, it was not a place of poverty, as a lot of people would like to portray in those days.
Yeah, and how did football come about in that kind of multi-gathering of people, Mike?
Strangely, for an island, there was always a great sporting tradition there from way, way back, long before my time. And when I came up in the early 40s, it was still strong there. Great, good, big population there, over 1,000 people. And I suppose from the local team playing there in matches in Cracow Park, teams like from Berrynan, Pope McGee, Renard, Carsween came into play in that field at Cracow. And one of my earliest memories is of matches in Carsween. I remember in particular the 1945 South Kerry final, Valencia and Waterford, with my father's boat upriver, 3 miles upriver, to Rain Machine Park. Valencia happened to win it. Cruising down the river that Sunday evening, a lot of the team were aboard in the cup, I remember it still. And that's one of my earliest memories of seeing organised games outside of Valencia. Mick, and I suppose that sowed the seed of interest in me.
There was probably a good bit of immigration there in the early 50s and things. Did you ever go near immigrating and going away? Did it ever come to your door?
Yeah, we see you're going to advance a bit there now. We go back to the 40s again. I said 45. I see a lot of those players that I saw in 45 playing, the massive majority of them immigrated, went to different parts of England and America. Apart from who the working door. In fact, the only one that was alive today would probably be Mick Driscoll, father of Ger, who played with Kerry. He used to play that time as well. But that was. There was no crying. People got on with life. If there wasn't work at home, they went off. And that was it. It was a pity. As John B. Keane said, many young men of 20, off they went and got on with life. There was no olagoning about it. That was it.
And when you mentioned that was the first type of organised football you had, Mike, what was your impressions of it, other than, as you say, yourself playing in the island with your comrades? And
I don't know. I must have liked it because I got fairly good. I could kick a ball well left and right when I was young and could handle it well. But as far as pretensions and ambitions for the future, that was, with my background, as if you got a hard fishing background, there was no pretensions as to that I might be playing for Kerry or anything else. Might, I suppose, maybe Havard hopes of playing with Valencia at one time or another, but that'd be as far as my ambitions would have gone at the time.
Could you talk about the end of the 30s and the mid-40s, even early into the 50s, listening to tales of Kerry football elsewhere, obviously through the radio, would that have been an impression, or was it just something that was a long way away?
Oh, yes, yes. It was the great Micheál O'Hare that he was listening to attentively. In fact, I remember the 1946 All-Ireland. I was in Carsveen, in my cousin's pub, Johnny Bond Cousin's pub, and a lot of Pope McGee fishermen. That's where I listened to that match on a Sunday, where fishermen just congregate, getting their money collected after a week's fishing. There was a great interest in the broadcast in particular. But it was tempered at home. Like, my father was disciplinarian. There was work to be done, and nets and ropes, pulling ropes, getting the twist and the kinks out of them. Going, he was an expert and at mending, putting patches into nets and so on. So that had to be done. But from where I lived, the football field was about a quarter of a mile away. I could hear the thud of the old leather ball in the summer evenings. That was something that straight away when I heard that, any chance I got, I would have been off. And in those times, it must be noted, as young lads, we played with the big lads and the not-so-big lads, because all age groups kicked around together. Because it was a case of going for a kick. The word training and it is just going for a kick, that was catching and kicking.
And you, Mick, before you reached the Kerry Miners then, you hadn't much competitive football played. You probably had been playing a lot, but you hadn't much competitive football in comparison to young fellas today, no?
Oh, you see, that's it. You've put it right there, Weezy. Played a lot of football in a carefree way amongst ourselves. We'd make three-a-side match or just kick through the body catching. But organised games, none. Before I was 14, 15 years, none except matches between ourselves. I went to secondary school in Castleveen, crossed by boat, cycled up. And played a couple of games with them, not much, but a couple of minor games. I suppose half a dozen games by the time I was age 17. That was as much as it. But that isn't to say that I didn't play a lot of it, and maybe that's what tends to, like a person who's interested, get a chance in a carefree way to develop the skills.
Would you think now, Mick, the young fellas of today, they're starting at 8, they're playing up along competitive football continuously, is that detrimental to them later on, would you think?
You can only guess at that, but you know, practice, if it's done properly, games plus practice would be the ideal, but I think, from what I observe anyway, I'm not involved in it nowadays, it seems to be, it's all games and organised training. Maybe if that wasn't done, they mightn't play at all. But if young lads are given the message that the better you get it, the more accomplished you get, the more you'll enjoy it. It brings me back to this. I was talking to a young lad from Carsonia, a club player, a few years ago, and they didn't do very well in some match the previous Sunday. I said to him, you know, he couldn't have expected doing so well. He didn't practice very much. Oh, we were in for the crack, he said. Of course, he said, we were all in for the crack, but the crack is much more enjoyable and much better if you're pretty good and successful at it. So he has agreed with that, yeah.
Just on the point of information, when you talk about the field in Valencia, Michael, were you talking about the field that's still there today, or was it a different place altogether now, just for...
Oh, the field that's there today, that wasn't thought of about the early 60s, no, it was another field, rough field with a lot of coarse grass, fedge growing in it, and it was a place called Cracker. It was a different field altogether, that's right, yeah.
Your first competitive game then, Mike, well, it wasn't competitive, you went for a trial then for the Kerry Miners. Tell us about, how did that come about now, and who brought you? There was one particular man, I think, was
there was, Jack Sugar. He was Jack Pauline Sugar, a shoemaker in Castleen, he worked with her in our club, and I came up for the trial in Tralee here, and it was a fine summer's evening, and I played, but trials are just mixed and gathering teams gathered together for the evening, and I got some few balls, but I would say nothing to write home about. I remember Jack said something to John Joshi, he was the main selector at the time, said that something on my behalf. I was selected for the
walk. I tell you what he said, Mick, would you believe? Dennis P. O'Sullivan, our great friend from Kilgarren, was on to me during the week. he says that Mick O'Connolly barely got under Kerry Miners in 1955. Jack Poundine brought him up, he says, and he said it might have been his first trip to Tralee. He said, I don't know whether it was or not. But anyway, he said Mick hadn't a great game in the trial, but when the game was over, Poundine went up to John Joshi. And he says, pick that man, he says, and you won't be sorry. As he said, perfect words, he said it was. So it was that was your first time in me putting on the green and gold, wasn't it?
Ah, yeah, well, you said there about Dennis P. It wasn't my first time in Tralee, because I can remember as young lads, we got out on bikes and cycled up to the training Carsveen, came up to see a minor All-Ireland semi-final in 48, went home that night by moonlight down from Carsveen and rode across. But great game or not so great game, I was selected in here for Waterford, and And that was my first time playing down in Dungarvan in 55.
Well, Mick, talk about that 55 team. I did a small bit of digging up and I just wrote a few names. I don't expect you to remember other people out. There was a Pascal O'Connor playing on that particular team. There was Tim Barrett. There was a John Lamb, Teddy Sullivan. I presume that's the Teddy Sullivan now that's in the county board. There was a Paddy Gaucher, Eamon Horan. He was Eamon. He became an eye specialist after, I think. He became a famous eye specialist after, and he's in Cork at the moment. And there was yourself from Frankie, the Ellis in the field. There was Dennis Bailey from Ballymac, and there was Jerry Weir, and Seamus Murphy, and Gary McMahon, John Welsh, and there was a T. Kearns. Did they bring it?
Oh, they do now that you mentioned them. A lot of the names I would have forgotten, but Frank O'Leary was there, yeah. He was well able to take left and right at the time, and we played right through. Drew was Tipperary in Killarney, and played a replay in Thurles. Tipperary won that match. But in those days, you just see the faces for the day of the match and go away home and scatter again. There was no such thing as gathering together or anything like that. So be it. That was the way of the time, and it was the stepping stone for me to get on the South Kerry senior team that year. Up to that, Ivor and Carsevine had a kind of an amalgam of teams and went nowhere. But Ned O'Mahony was the creamery manager in the Dairy Disposal Board there in town. He brought a lot of good young men down to work in the creamery there. Gerald O'Sullivan, Dissang, Tony O'Neill, Dennis Bailey from Ballymac worked in the observatory, and Finbar McAuliffe, Cartman, worked in Walton. So a good South Kerry team was got together, and we played in the Cowan Championship. So we drew with North Kerry in the final that year. And I was at a funeral last week. Dan McAuliffe, who was playing that time, who was a fine player left and right. Sad to see he died last week. He was playing with North Kerry, Jim Brosnan, and Dean O'Dillon. So I remember after that game coming down to the year, Ned Mahoney said to me, "Connell, I think you were the best man there today, I suppose." And Mullin Ogres took it, she made an impression on me. I can remember it since. So we won the replay, and that was the stepping stone, I suppose, for me anyway, to get recognition.
So Mick, you would say that this the right word in a young fella's ear at the right time is a big help too, isn't it?
Oh, it is, I suppose, if it's deserved. You kind of always know yourself whether you played reasonably well or not, but have it affirmed by somebody else, I suppose, is a little help in a bit of a boost.
Yeah, I mean, you have a few comments there.
Yeah, just from a Michael Kelleher, Lohar Cannon. Good wishes to Mick Owen. Congrats on getting Kerry Person of the Year, and thanks for all the years of enjoyment. And here's a man that you probably know well, Mike, Donald Marcus O'Neill from Castlevane. Good wishes to Mick Owen, a well-deserved programme.
Oh yeah, Donald was our goalkeeper. That him, a great goalkeeper he was. Ned O'Mahony that I mentioned there already was Donald's uncle, and Donald came to the creamery at that time as well, and he was a stalwart goalkeeper there, very hard to beat, and made some great saves in those.
He did. One of my earliest memories when I was young, Flint, was going to county finals in Tralee, one of those or two of those county finals, and I remember the likes of yourself, and in particular, I must say, Donald Marcus O'Neill. He had a great habit of swinging off the crossbar, and I was stuck in my mind if a forward was running in and he'd swing off the crossbar. However, listen, we are going for a quick break now. Now, if you want to join in, 066-236-666, Margaret Bick is waiting for comments. Stay with us on Terrace Talk. We are with Mick O'Connell until 7:30, back in 2 minutes. We are talking to Mick O'Connell tonight, and 066-236-666 if you want to join in. Now we're going to the comment line because we're going down to South Kerry. We're going talking to the president, would you believe, of the South Kerry board, John Sullivan, better known as John Torino Sullivan, a man who has given a life service to the GAA and a personal long-time friend of Mick O'Connell. John, you're welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Wiggy. How are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you doing yourself?
Not so bad, dear. And how's the man?
Great, thanks a million, John.
Well, tell us your memories of Mick growing up and what you remember of it, John.
Oh, my memories of Mick growing up, I always followed him to all games to watch him playing. He was my ideal. And I have no hesitation. Opinion, of course, says that he was the greatest footballer of all time, with which I agree. His fielding was a treat to watch. His pinpoint passing with the boot was dead on. He preferred it to the hand pass. He always said the game was football, not handball.
And you used to drive him around, John, is that right?
Yes, I dropped into several games, yeah. Together with his other friends in Willingham.
Was he a good driver, mate?
John, hello, John. Oh, I remember I had some very pleasant days with John. Nice man, a good driver, and thanks for your comments there, John. Yeah, I would share that, yes.
Yeah.
Fielding was an outstanding feature of the game, I think, for satisfaction for the player, and I suppose for from the spectator's point of view, to something that lives in the memory. It's good fielding, whether no matter who it is by. But yes. thanks for your comments there, John.
Do you remember the to the match in Tralee and Jim Shugrow?
Jim Shugrow, oh yeah, sure, Jim.
Yes, he's got... that it was all Dats going up, talking about Dats.
Oh yeah, Jim was a great footballer. If Jim Salkerry had come forward some years before when Jim was a younger man, he'd have certainly made his name on the Kerry team, because he was an outstanding back there for us in Salkerry.
And he was a champion that player too, of course.
He was. I was great company.
He was.
I was sad to see him die a few years ago there, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
John, listen, thanks for joining us.
Right.
And for those memories, and listen, keep up the good work down there in Salkerry. Thanks very much for joining us.
Right.
Mick, your first scene of game with Kerry was against Cork. I mean, was it in a Toastle match or something?
But after the 1955 season, I suppose my name was mentioned a little, and Ty Crowley gave me a call. I was down in Cork for a few months that time in UCC, and said, would I bring my boots along one Sunday? There was a match against Kerry against Cork down in the Cork Athletic Grounds, as it was known then, and would I go along? So I brought my boots this Sunday, one day at around midday. I was walking down the street, and Tom Moriarty, who had won an All-Ireland with Kerry previously, he said, where are you going? I said, I give some mutter, something like that, but going along to a match. So I went to the Metropole Hotel, and we went down, and I was selected midfield, and I don't know, Tom was playing senior, but I got more of the ball than anybody else that day in the middle of the field. And thereafter, when Kerry played to Brady in the first round of the Munster Championship, I was selected, and then until I finished, whenever I was available until 1972, I was selected. Okay, I was never
well, Mick, that day in 1956, in your first game, there was a man, Matthew, a great friend of yours, and I'm glad to say a good friend of all of us, Con Paddy O'Sullivan. He was my friend center field that day. Con, you're welcome.
Good evening.
How are you?
Good evening, Richie.
How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Listen, what are your memories of that first game there?
I still remember the day very well. It was early June on Toastle weekend, and this very tall, slim, athletic man was playing on me that day. Mick O'Connell, I always remember he travelled every inch of the field the same day. It was my first time to Cork, and I couldn't make head nor tail of the big field. The field was so big, the old athletic grounds.
And you clashed a good few times after that, Con?
We clashed a good few times after that, yes. And we always played it there. But I mean, I always admired Mick O'Connell. He was such a beautiful fielder and such a great athletic man. You know, his fielding and his kicking was a joy to watch always. And I wish him the best. I'd like to congratulate him in being elected Kerry Man of the Year. He richly deserved that award. And we met several times after that, you know.
Made a few good battles, Mick.
We had great battles, even in 66, Mick Killarney, and you left the field and maybe in a bit of a hurry, we got delayed that day, and I'll always remember this for you, that you sent Johnny Cullity into the old Imperial Hotel, that Johnny Cullity came in and told me I was wanted outside. And I went out, and who was sitting in the car outside the door, but Mick himself, and the hand was out. He said, congratulating me on winning the Munster final, said he missed me after the match, and wished me and the rest of the team the best of luck, 1966. And I thought, that memory will always stand out in my mind.
Nice memory, Mick.
Yeah, nice memory. Wish it was nice that I made a messenger of Johnny Cullity with the same.
Do you remember that, Mick?
I do, John. I remember that was your first Munster. Well, we had the better of most of the Cork down through the years. But really, I can remember some great days with Con, and against Cork in particular, and Killarney, Cork Athletic Grounds at various places, with some great sporting years. And it was great that Cork won it that year, and that Con got his reward. Con gave great service to Cork. And I was delighted to see a few years ago that you mentioned Kerry Man of the Year here, myself, that you got to be the Taoiseach of the O'Sullivan clan there in Kilgarvan. I was present the same night that you got the award.
You travelled all the way up from South Kerry to be present.
Yeah, yes.
Taoiseach in Kilgarvan.
That's a title that I never won as chieftain in my own clan, so maybe sometime.
Con, thanks for joining us.
I'd always make after when he played for Kerry up in 1974, of course. But after that, I would just, on behalf of everybody, and you know, where he put his energy into those great charity matches. He played up in Beira, several times up in Beira for various charities, for the underprivileged, for the and Mick O'Connell will have to be remembered for all the charitable work he done.
Right. Con, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Enjoy your evening.
Thanks very much. We're staying in the comment line now for 1 minute. We've gone back down to South Kerry. Another great South Kerry footballer on the line. Maris Fitzgerald. Maris, you're welcome.
Hello, Weishi. How are you?
Not too bad at all.
How are you keeping? Just a quick word, Weishi. I'm on the road to Tralee. I thought I'd give a quick ring in.
Right, Maris.
Because I might be changing your direction slightly there, but from a younger perspective point of view, I'd just like to say Mikko has been a great inspiration, I suppose, over many decades to many different players, but I've always found him to the players and people in South Kerry. You know, he's been a great man for the young players and the up-and-coming players, and he's always been a great source of inspiration. Always plenty of words and advice and encouragement, and personally, I found him a great mentor to have in the background anyway. Thanks, Mikko, for those and for the memories as well. I have probably, I suppose, Weishi, been a bit fortunate that while I mightn't have seen him play like many of your callers, I would have been rubbing shoulders with him quite often on a lot of weekends, so it's nice to be able to go for a few kicks, and I'm sure Mikko still enjoys a bit of kicking around.
Thanks, Morris. Thanks for your comments.
You're welcome, Tammy.
Yeah. Morris's father, Ned, myself, were colleagues from way back. And like Morris, we often have a kick around together. Might have seen the Lagos program, we gave him an exhibition there.
He gave a nice exhibition with you, but Ned and Morris, yourself and your command, yeah, you might be changing the course of the program, but listen to me. Any time you go anywhere, you're changing the course of a game or something, you're always selling dummies anyway.
Well, they say, wish you were playing a bit of a blinder yourself.
Listen, Morris, it was lovely to hear from you, and thanks for your call.
Good luck. Thanks, Weishi. Bye-bye now.
Yeah, as Morris is on there, I'd like to mention both Ned. Ned and Jerome O'Shea and myself were three South Kerry men. We played in the first, my first game of football in the National League semi-final against Cavan 1957, and Ned had great skills left and right of the footballer himself. He eased out of it, and I think it was a good job because I think he kept his energies for coaching Morris. And we talk a lot about official coaching and foundation course and things nowadays. I think Ned has proved his worth as a coach, but he turned out Morris to be such an outstanding kicker.
Listen, Mike, just while we're talking about the likes of yourself and Morris, they bridge a great gap of Kerry stars, but when outside of the South Kerry football and Kerry football for you in the 50s, who were the people that you honed in relation to Kerry footballers?
Well, living in a nice place like Valencia, we didn't have, it was different to nowadays when people have pictures and so on. We're depending on Mihalo here for the visuals, I'd say the 40s, I suppose, the Paddy Kinnies, the Paddy Bonds, the Lions, and names like that. They'd be the heroes that came across the airwaves to us. And
they would obviously be played against some of them and heard about more of them.
Well, those men, they became great personal friends of mine in later times. And I think I was privileged in those days from different age groups. When I was a young player starting out, the George Rossies, Johnny Welch's, Mort Kelly's, Jackie Lyons, I mentioned Paddy Bonds, of a previous generation. We could integrate and meet in hotels, have nice time and have chats and reminiscence about old times. I think that was a wonderful, interesting part of my football life. And I was very lucky to have those people. I hope I didn't miss any names there.
Definitely not. Like, anyway, I just, if I could just say a comment that Paddy Kennedy, obviously you're often compared, or he's compared to you in this thing, and I know there's something that you're not, you don't go along with, but I read a comment by Paddy Kennedy, and he said, it was a great thing, he said, that Mick O'Connell came along, because otherwise I'd have been forgotten about, he said. So I thought it was a nice tribute to both of you in the same breath.
Oh yeah, speaking about Paddy Kennedy, we can't be wrong, we talk about feeling there and all around ability, what is a good footballer, but I think unquestionably, Paddy Kennedy must have been the best fielder of all time, because no matter where I went around Ireland, old men were able to recall Paddy Kennedy's feeling his place. But comparing players of the past with the present or of different eras is ridiculous. All you can compare is styles of play. Perhaps, on the other hand, maybe all-round kicking ability. Dan Spring said to me he played with Paddy Kennedy. Paddy Kennedy, an outstanding fielder, his kicking could be better. But that might balance things out. But everybody who I've ever mentioned when they're discussing fielding, Paddy Kennedy is the name that came foremost in their eyes. So he must have been outstanding. Nick, at a time when fielding was one of the features of the game.
Mick, before we go to the comment line again, Mort Gallivan, that great Killarney GMN, said, Mick, thanks for all the great years you gave us. You know Mort there, he spends all his time about Bracker Regan, senior and junior, sends best wishes and says we will never see his likes again. Killarney boxing personality John Killer O'Callaghan says, all the best, Mick, from one Kerry legend to another. And he says he'll see you in the St. Patrick's Day parade up in the stand tomorrow. So you can be expecting to see that great man, John. Your
thanks,
comments
thanks,
there.
Man.
Timothy Cahill in Abbey Field, thanks for all the great memories, Mike. From Ty Glover and Bellin colleague, he says, I think that Mike, Mihala Mokatig and Jack O'Shea all attended the night for Bellin colleague GA last year, and they wish to send their good wishes. Dinosaur Reardon Kilfinnan, congrats and very good wishes to Mico. Listening at present to a wonderful show. John O'Sullivan Cassavine, good wishes to Mico. Congrats on getting Kerry Person of the Year and a wonderful TV programme last August. And a knock McGossel colour. I'll come back to that one because I haven't the chance here to make it out.
No, before we go to a bad game for everybody in Kerry 57, we'll be glancing over Chucky. We're going to the comment line again. Dennis P. O'Sullivan, we spoke a while ago, Mick. Dennis P. Finkelgavin. Dennis, how are you? Ta Falter Road. Well, what have you to say to us?
Well, just very briefly, Cargada Christmour, Mika, and thanks to Millen for the countless hours of enjoyment you gave us. And thanks too for coming to honour us in Kilgavin on very special occasions, including when Connie Paddy was elected Taoiseach. And it is a great honour for me tonight to be listening to this programme because two of my greatest and special friends are on it. And I remember that night when Connie was naming his cabinet, you were chosen by him, I think, as Minister for Sport and Leisure. Gramila Mahagiv Galea.
Gramahagat, Dennis, thanks very much. Mick, what in your opinion is a good footballer?
A good footballer? Well, I suppose there's two ways to look at it. A lot of people will judge them by the kind of matches they play. But I think the first thing is to have the technical attributes. That is, to have good hands, good feet. Preferably to kill with both off the hands and off the ground. And then again, of course, the ultimate in good football is to be able to play that in a match. Some might be very good, particularly, but they might be able to play it very well in a match. So there's such variations. A good footballer, a good goalkeeper, a good back, a good midfielder, a good forward, there are different skills needed. And when there's a blanket statement about certain being a good footballer, the best footballer, it's a bit ridiculous, really, because a goalkeeper, Johnny Culty or Johnny Ligham and myself, different skills are needed, or Tiggy Line or Mike Sheehy, one of those. A midfielder, that's the place where I played, and I had the freedom to play. I can only comment really on that, but I suppose the all-round basic skills are good catching and good kicking, but then to apply them to your position on the field. The position I played in, it afforded me a freedom to play, to express myself very well, much more than any other part in the field. And for that, I suppose it wouldn't be fair of me to comment on maybe shortcomings of players who played in the other part of the field, where there were restrictions on the amount of freedom they had.
Mike, people often say, and I know myself, that we saw at times, other sports and other sportsmen, would they have had an influence on you, or would it be just an admiration you'd have for them?
Well, no, I remember in a young lad in Valencia, there was a man who was a lightkeeper and a teacher. They had a great interest in other sports from different parts of the country. They showed me pictures of Stan Lee matches and great, and the pictures kind of excited me. And ever afterwards, I had a great interest. In fact, in my playing years, in 1961-62, I went over to England just to see professional soccer played with Spurs. I mean, in the Welsh Rugby League. And any opportunity I got, I still have a great interest in sport. And I could sit down now, 62 years of age, and look at the game from another court and enjoy it as much as the court I played myself. And I think that's it's enriched my life. I've been in international sports as well. And yes, I have an interest in more sports. Maybe. Even American football, which a lot of people think is crude. And it's just crude. But there are aspects of it. Once you understand the rules of game, like baseball. When I went to America in 1963, I thought baseball, people looking for a whole day looking. I understand the rules of it now. There is wonderful teamwork in it. And how to explain that to a person who doesn't understand the rules. But once you understand the game, you'll get the most benefit out from watching.
Mick, the biggest bugbear in Gaelic football down through the years has been pulling and dragging. Now, I was lucky enough to have seen you in most of your career up a land. I never saw you pulling and dragging. I often saw you pulled and dragged, of course. Now, how did you put up with this? And you never succumbed to going back pulling and dragging to other people. Talk to us about your times in the middle of the field and how people treated you in that respect.
Oh, well, I suppose it goes back to my origins. One's upbringing, people talk about the schools, church and state and these things. The biggest influence, I think, in any human being is the home. I came from a home, my father, he was a seaman. Everything had to be right. You do it right, you don't do it at all. There's no way that you let a rope hang over the side, you go on the propeller or something like that. I saw the games played in the 40s as a young man. I didn't see pulling and dragging, and that's what stayed with me. And I think, really, the pulling in dragon started when people started running with the ball. I think the basis of Gaelic football when it was found the first day was that the ball did the travelling. The solo run started in the late 40s, early 50s, has multiplied that it's almost an inherent part of the game now. And I think that you have charging and counter-charging. But as regards myself, I can only speak about myself, it never entered my mind that I would foul. I liked the game, and if I was beaten, that's part of the sport for a ball. But the thing is, the positive aspect of the game is not emphasised enough, I think, down through the years. It's play well, and if that play is better than the other side, you'll win. But if the concentration is on beating the other man, going out to mark him, to beat him, that's negative. And I think there's too much of that promoted down through the years. And it often comes from the sideline, that the positive aspect of it is not promoted. But it's one of the things that I look back with the greatest satisfaction, that my motto was to play and let play. Never, ever did I go out to balk a brother man first and play football second. That was it. No praise to me. That's the way it should be played.
Did you think that the arrival of Down in the early 60s changed the game of football, say, right up to the mid-70s?
Well, I say this. There's a statistic in the first match played in 1960. Down did foul a lot. They played very positive football. They did foul a lot. But I think I wouldn't attribute it to Down or to any other thing. I think that the rot had started with the running with the ball and charging. The association itself, they mean well, they've done great work down to the years, the officers of the association here in Kerry and everywhere else, but there is a lack of ability to be able to phrase the rules of the game so that people and players understand them properly. Look, charging, it is blatant use of bodily force while in possession of the ball and to gain advantage over the opponent. And that's flouted right, left and centre. These are the counter pull and drag by the defender to that. And it's not explained properly as to what that is. I think that's what, but it's so rooted in the game now. When you see 69 fouls in an All-Ireland final there, if you're going to Cork and Meath, to me, they can't. I never involved myself in that kind of a game anyway.
Mick, we're going for a short break again. Before we do so, there's a man living in O'Connell's Terrace in Killarney. He isn't called after you renting out his terrace. You have walked up and down. He's 90 years old. The man has lost his sight. He's Derry Fleming, a good friend of mine. Great man to listen to Radio Kerry, listen to all the matches. And they just, he'll be 90 years of age next Sunday. I want to wish him happy birthday. And he said to wish you all the best. Billy Doolin of Kilcommon says congratulations to Mick for all you've done. And he says me that Kilcommon are having a big do in the Drumhall Hotel in April the 8th to honour the 73 team that won the O'Donoghue Cup. And the tickets can be got in the post office, and they can be got from Billy Doolin, and they can be got from Dan Dwyer for Dermot Mining, or from Sean Kelly. Big do coming up there for the old Kilcommon team. 73, that's the one that Dan Dwyer scored the goal in the final to win it. He's still talking about it. We're talking to Mick O'Connell. Stay with us and tell us talk. We'll be back in a few minutes. Well, we're going to the comment line again now, and I'm going to introduce a man, and I'm going to introduce him as an old Kilgarvan hurler and nothing else. Jackie Healy, you're welcome.
We see very much for a fantastic program.
Yeah, you're enjoying it, Jack. Good.
Just for a second.
Where with you, my man?
To compliment Mico and wish him the very best, and let nobody contradict me when I say without a shadow doubt in my mind that he was one of the finest, the best, and the most all-round ball players that I ever see, and I see nearly in every one of the big games he played. And he was a fantastic footballer, and I'm listening to comments from various parts of the country back over the years, and I can candidly and honestly say he was definitely, without a question of doubt in my mind, the very best that ever went into a Gaelic football field. And I wish him the very best, and I wish your program and yourself the very best this evening, Wishy. And thanks a million.
Stay with us, Jackie. Do you want to say something to Jack?
Thank you, Jackie. I know Jackie for a long, long time when he was driving trucks around South Kerry, and I met him in latter years as a county councillor with some very pleasant days in his county council. I say this about Jackie. He cheered us up on many occasions. But congratulate him in his election to the All-Ireland as well, and on your great work.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Jackie, again for your comments.
Thank you, Michael, and I wish you the very best and continued success.
And thanks for joining. Thanks for joining us, Jack.
And I hope to see you tomorrow in Killarney.
You will indeed at the Patrick's Day Parade. Thanks, Jack. Now we're staying on the comment line because we're going to Castle Island, and we went to an old Kilgarvan hurler there. Now we're going to an old Castle Island referee, a man by the name of Tom Brennan, a good friend of ours. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Wishy.
You're welcome to the programme, my friend.
Thanks, Wishy.
Away with you.
I just want to thank Mico, like the rest of the people, for the pleasure he gave us over the years. And a couple of things that stick in my memory of Mico was 2 points he kicked in Croke Park one day, about 55 yards out, one with the left and one with the right leg. And I'm delighted there that he commented on the state of football at the present time, because, as he says, it is called football. I have the same opinion myself, that the quickest way to get the ball over your own half is to kick it, and the quickest way to get it down into the forward from centre field is to kick it. And but going back to the point I wanted to make about Mico, I was in Waterville one day. The Desmonds were playing Waterville when Mico was playing with Waterville, and we got a free just outside the 14-yard line, and I don't know which one of the boys took it, whether it was to win the game or draw the game or whatever, but Mico went about 5 feet over the bar to pull it down anyway. it was the highest fielding I ever see by any man. I wonder if you remember the day or not, but I was in his own place in Valencia one day, a bad, mucky old day refereeing a match, and you know, there was a lot of old shimodgling going on, and it was called a sign of weakness at the time for a referee to blow for a hot ball, if you remember, we see.
That's right, Tom.
And at half time, Mico strolled into the field and he says to me, Tom, he says, did you ever hear of a hot ball? And I said, well, I says, Mico, you know, it is a sign of a weakness in the referee. He says, get out of an hour, lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And I took his advice after that. But I generally just wanted to thank him for the pleasure. And he came in when I was involved with other referees, and he came in to us and he spoke to us one night, and he was very informative and put his views across constructively. And I just you know, generally want to thank him.
Thanks, Tom. Listen,
the pleasure he gave us.
Right, Mick wants to say a word to there, Tom.
Thanks, Tom, for your comments there. But as a referee, I think the referees in Gaelic football are the martyrs to a cause. They've done great work with no cooperation from officialdom or players. But I think a referee in the ideal situation should be going there to start the match, blow for kicks out, and to mark down the scores. I think they have the hardest job, Council, and the players have made it very hard for them. And I'd say, really, that it's been made harder as the years go on. Changing rules, asking you to use red cards, yellow cards, this cards, and so on. I think, congratulations, and thank you for your services as a referee down to the years, Tom.
Thanks for joining us, Tom.
Thanks. Good luck, Weezy.
Good luck, Tom. Eamon, you have a few comments there?
A few is right. It's thank you, one Weezy. From Sean O'Hargan and Walkerville, nobody deserves the Kerry Person Award. Better seen, saw me play one of his last games of Valencia for, I suppose, in Castlebean for the Valencia. Tom Randalls, congrats to Mico, one of the greats, the Georgie best of Gaelic football, and congrats on the Kerry Person. Liam and Mary Buck from Killaglin, congrats and best wishing to Mico. Pat Golden, Kells Post Office, a great friend through the years, opened the shop for us years ago, enjoying the programme. Patchy Jai, Long Rangers, great to hear you have a programme to yourself, you deserve it. Good wishes from Eric Murphy. He wants to know, is it a good feeling to be at the other side of the sea? To answer that for me.
Yeah.
Marie, I think this is a very interesting one from Port McGee. Good wishes. Mico's a real hero, and Marie's grandfather used Mico. He was too honest to be a politician. It was a great honour that Mico be thanked on behalf of Marie's family for attending the bedside of her dying grandfather. And finally, Vincent Swan, in 1959 in the semi-final, John D. Hickey reported, "Pigeons flying overhead were not safe, as Mico was kicking and catching so high."
Mick, training. I just talked to you about training. Now, we're hearing an awful lot today about all this heavy training, stamina training, they're training all year round. Now, I don't know what type of training you were doing at home or anything like that, but is the fielding gone out of the game due to the heavy training? Talk to us about that aspect of the game, and what are your views on it?
Oh, well, I don't know much about the training that goes on at the present time. I'm gone from the game since the early 70s, but as regards myself, I came from the most unlikely background to be involved in serious sport at all, as I explained to you already. But I had to improvise from an early stage and get on with my training. I think good training is a combination of skill training plus fitness training. So in my days, I had to improvise in many ways. Many of the young boys that I got from the side of a hill kicking the ball down to me to get the fielding below. In fact, I had to recruit men. There were county council workers, light keepers, anyone who passed the road to kick the ball from high ground down to me to get ball training and to do running on my own and physical training. There's one thing that I think that it was a natural bit I had. It was a good spring, and that came from my everyday practice. If I was going across the field, jumping over ragwort or oak lawns, if there was a strip of barbed wire across, I'd jump over and jump back in, jump over back, or a cummer. You know what a cummer is, Wishy?
I don't make.
Cummer is a wide cavern or a dike or over a stream. I'd jump that to develop your spring. And for that reason, we talk a lot about scientific training. I think is something that's what's needed to have use of the body, good hands, good feet, and from what I see fellas training, just observe, I think there'll be a lot to learn, despite all the scientific talk about coaching things nowadays. But I, in my own particular case, I'm not saying that I would have, but from experience garnered over the years, I think it could be improved on a lot.
Outside of training, Mike, what influence would, in your own, do you know, Dr. Eamon and Jackie Lyons have had in relation to, maybe not training, but in actually getting your team to gel together?
Well, you see, in those days, I give you an example. 1959, we won the National League, won the Munster Championship, and we hadn't one session together. That didn't mean to be the way it trained. I didn't even personally train every day. But the Dr. Eamon, the Jackie Lyons, they were only players together for very short periods, a few weeks of the year.